Hello, you are listening to the Mantic Universe podcast, and apologies for the strange sounds. So this is Chris, and as ever, I'm joined by my good friend Clem.
Hi, everybody.
And also here is our good friend Trent.
Hey, guys.
And our good friend Mario.
Hi there.
Who may or may not choose to speak. That's entirely on him. Hopefully there's at least one more person on the way, but we're doing this now. So we are in person, and we're doing a little day campaign for Firefight I've written called The Signal. And apologies for the bad sound. We had several more mics, but this is as good as we can get it. What are you going to do?
We're playing with new toys.
Right?
So, you know, we're experimenting.
We're playing with a white elephant. I mean, my Christmas present. That's it. So, super. So, The Signal. We're going to be playing three games of Firefight. So, the location, we're on Icarus 3. We're inside the Death Arc. And for people that don't know, the Death Arc is this big bit of space with planets and solar systems and things where there was civilizations which were inexplicably sort of dead, and it's a big tomb. And it may or may not have something to do with the plague, Clem.
Maybe, who knows?
Maybe. Stranger things have happened. So, playing today, so we have the plague, you'll be shocked to hear.
Surprising.
We have GCPS, specifically the Trontech Corporation. We have the Marauders, who may or may not be in the pay of Maison Labs. And we have the Forge Fathers. And if other people turn up, we might also introduce the Asterians and Enforcers. So we're playing, you can scale this however you want to, but we're playing 750 points per faction. The only list building rules I gave were the Plague must include a Plague General, for reasons that will become apparent. And so I'm just going to explain bits, and there are bits that are just for Clem only. So if I say, oh, this bit's for Plague early only, if you two can just skedaddle, because there's some secret information for...
Just stop listening and go, la, 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 la.
Yeah. Because I've just realised how difficult it'll be actually for Trent to move. Good. So, introduction. Icarus 3 lies deep within the Death Arc. No known contact with the planet has occurred for over 20 years. While it was within suspected Asterian space, the dead civilizations on the planet was something else, something even older still and unknown. Icarus 3 has strange interference that means our scanners cannot penetrate the atmosphere. 5 days ago, repeating signals started broadcasting from Icarus 3. We have been unable to decrypt so far, but it looks like a high-level GCPS military code. To our knowledge, the GCPS has never been on the planet because we're deep within the Death Arc. Deeper than it. Oh my goodness. Who started the signal? Is it an SOS? Your job is to take your force, the force available to you, and find out what is going on Icarus 3. Hostile forces will no doubt have heard the signal as well and will be en route. So the forces you have are small enough to slip through the enforcer blockade. Go to Icarus 3, find out what's going on, neutralize anyone that tries to stop you. So, for GCPS Trontech, so this is specifically for Mario, this is your stuff. So, we are unable to decrypt, but this looks like one of our codes. We have never knowingly operated in the Icarus sector. We're going through the channels to check Black Ops work now. If there are Trontech secrets out there, we cannot allow them to fall into alien hands. We're still another corporation. Ooh. And, Trent, this is you, buddy. Marauders. They've received an urgent signal from the Maison Labs, an old and trusted, in quotes, client. We are to deploy and recover any Trontech secrets that may be on the planet. The Forge Fathers, they were committing illegal mining operations within the Death Arc, and they've just been sent en route.
As
you have to cease your mining and investigate a GCPS signal. Use all force available to you. A Forge Star is stationed outside the Death Arc, but we cannot risk a major confrontation with the Enforcers or Asterians. Asterians are actually not in this campaign, but there's a little bit of blurb for them. I was initially going to play as Asterians and then changed my mind when I was repainting my Forge Fathers a little bit, to be honest. So, plague only. So this bit is just for Clem.
So your ears.
So this bit, buddy, is just, I just have to tell him it's secret stuff.
Or should I read it? Oh no, because we want to record it.
Yeah. So Mario, can you go and hide so you can't hear?
We'll grab a beer or something.
Yeah. Okay. So, Clem. So we basically we're continuing on from the story, from Rob Berman's story, but this is 100% unofficial. He very much does not approve of what we're doing. So your general is Chad Ryder. Mm-hmm. So he escaped. Right, from the from the short story, he sort of escaped with the forces he had left, but he's escaped into the Death Ark. Mm-hmm. But he's hatched a plan, right?
Ooh.
Yeah. So I'm gonna affect a voice. You ready? They call me infected, but I am free. For so long, I've been scurrying around, performing the plans and schemes of Tromtech, making our shareholders richer, ever-increasing digits. And then he talks about how rotten the GCPS is and compares them to a zombie, you know. So his plan is, so he's going to lure the GC, his old Tromtech forces, he's going to lure them to Icarus 3. And then he's going to turn them.
Yeah,
and then he's going to attack the GCPS.
That's replenish the forces by bringing old friends.
Exactly, and I go into a little bit more detail, but that's basically the idea. I'll do the plague only bit now, and then we'll get everyone back. So plague only. So they've taken the bait, but as we anticipated, they are not alone. The Maison Labs are lazy. They have hired the first contractor on the list. As a general within Tromtech, I know the Marauder commander. He is pragmatic. He knows his men cannot be infected with the plague, and nor does he want to die in this lonely place. As long as he can pay his men and be the only one to live to tell the tale of what happened here, he will have no issue betraying the Maison Labs. Well, we can tie up the loose ends later, and basically he's going to attack the nearest GCPS thing and spread. So we've allowed the Marauders to land unmolested. They've set up positions on the air approach to the source of the signal and remain in the Badlands outside the city. That's this table here. That's actually going to be this table here. Okay, cool. And now we just need other people back.
I'll go bring them back in.
You can come back.
Okay.
And sorry, dear listener, you may very well hear children screaming in the background.
Both last time we played.
Yeah.
That's good.
That's good.
Okay, guys. So we're on Icarus 3. So you've been hired by the Maison Labs.
Got to recover technology, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I was listening.
Yeah. I'd be really interested to see what Fred does with the recording. So we've got, so round one, so we've got two games going on. So the GCPS versus the Marauders is here, and Plague versus the Forge Fathers is here. So GCPS versus Marauders. We're coming in hot. The Marauders were waiting for Tromtech to make planetfall and had a surprise waiting for them as they entered atmosphere. The Tromtech landing shuttle has been shot down by hastily constructed rocket positions. Marauders are to breach the hull of the wrecked ship. The GCPS are to hold on. So this is within the spaceship of the GCPS, who got shot down, and this is Trent, this is you breaking into the ship and trying to kill them all.
Ooh, I like that. Okay.
Yeah.
That's some motivation.
Yeah.
I'm glad I got all those Ripper Claws now.
Yeah. They come in handy. And then Plague versus Forge Fathers. The Forge Fathers have made planetfall without incident and in good order into the Badlands outside the city. I feel like I haven't actually mentioned the city yet, but spoiler alert, that's the source of the signal. But this is a very strange situation. As we entered the atmosphere, we discovered the source of the signal is a huge GCPS city. Oh no, okay, I'm okay. It is a tomb, but once upon a time, this city would have been as grand and rich as anything within the first sphere. What is going on? We have deployed just outside the city, sensing a trap. The plague. The Marauders have shot down the GCPS. They are stranded and surrounded by wolves. The Forge Fathers' response was swifter than I anticipated, but they have been drawn to the city. We can trap them and destroy them there, then deal with whatever is left from the GCPS and the Marauders. So, I think that's, you know, we've set the scene. We know why we're fighting. You've been shot down and you're trying not to die. You've shot someone down and you're trying to kill
them. Trying to kill them, yeah.
And Clem is, you know, the puppet master, just trying to really kill everyone, to be honest. Cool. And the Forge Fathers were just
my. I have intruders on my planet, of course.
Yeah.
They are the attacker.
It's their fault, yeah, for responding to the signal. Yeah. Oh, and there's plot armor, so if stuff dies, it comes back next game. Right?
Okay.
You don't really die, your leader doesn't really die, he just gets shot and go, oh
yeah,
but he's back.
This is Rob Fanuff from the Counter Charge Podcast, and you're listening to the Mantic Universe Podcast, the only podcast that has the balls to cover all their games.
Hello, so we're back with a very dodgy sounding, I think you can hear the rain outside, but you know, we are where we are. Super, so we've just played two games of Firefight, and the Marauders attacked the ship, the GCPS ship, and Trent, it was pretty bloody. Some GCPS did survive, but not so many.
Yeah, we had a medic, a strider, and a mortar team that was left. So, you know, they...
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Out of 2,000 points, it's a good...
But their Overwatch assault reaction, or whatever you want to call it, is... I vastly underestimated that. So they mowed a lot of orcs down on the way.
Oh, shame. Yeah. What a shame.
Yeah. Make you pay dearly for the lives.
And then, so the mortar team and the strider and the medic all then escaped out the back door.
Yeah.
And they've made some more friends somehow. So, good. Super. And then our game, Clem. So it was the Forge Fathers and the Plague. We were outside the city.
I would say kind of an unfortunate encounter for the Plague. I think I had a pretty good sneaky plan on you. Like, I concentrated my forces in one area, unmasked my big blobs of zombies, but ultimately the superior firepower of the Forge Fathers kind of, let's say, led me to a tactical retreat into the forest. Right? Like the Teratons and the General were almost the only thing left on the table at the end.
A little bit. But it was one of those games where just at the key times I'd had just enough dice. Right. To swing it, just it was actually a very, very tight fight.
I have to say, I liked your broker hero being blown up in pieces.
It one shot it by the mortar, right at the end of the game. Pieces everywhere.
Bye bye.
Yeah, that was very, very cool. And I dropped my hammer fist drop troopers at the back, and then Clem just sort of ignored them and carried on.
I just ran away from them.
Yeah, it's kind of my best thing. But the Brockers just kept sort of winning me back to the key building, I think, at the crucial times.
I think it changed hands three times.
It is, right? Yes, at least.
Changed each other out of it a few times.
So by the board state at the end, it looked like it was one-sided, but it was anything but. I think losing your aberration was rough on you, right?
Yeah, I think so. It was a bit of a gamble with the aberration, but I also fluffed the dice, and it just evaporated, and it shouldn't have. And but that's the way it is.
So we plan to play three scenarios today, but you know, time's run away with us a little bit, shall we say? Plus, we want to try some Dungeon Saga Origins as well.
And the boss literally arrived while we were playing.
Yes, which is very on brand.
Change of plans.
Plus, I want to watch the John Carpenter classic film Ghosts of Mars. So, you know, that's all time. So we're going to skip over scenario two, which was going to be called The Source. So that was very much the Plague trying to consolidate their power and also make contact with the Marauders. That was sort of their plan all along, actually, to flip the Marauders. So we're going to skip straight to you. So, and dear listener, I'm going to share these notes online, so please feel free to use them. So we're skipping straight to scenario three, endgame. So it's going to be, so the Plague General, he used to work for Trontech, and he's turned the Marauders, so he's kind of done a deal with them. And I spoke to Rob Berman about this, and he said he doesn't think a Plague General would have enough brain left to be able to do this, but it's our story. We do.
But this guy is kind of special, right?
Like, he was special. That's what I thought.
We know from the story that he's kind of a specific type of Plague. Like, he's reacting better. Like, the Plague is using him in an interesting way.
Exactly.
So it's not completely crazy.
Yeah. No. Fantastic. Thanks, buddy. So it's a two player game. Sorry, a two against two game. So the GCPS and the Forge Fathers have aligned themselves just to try and escape. So we've got 3 points on them in the middle of the map. So we've got the two hills in this building here, and let's negotiate that in a second. So basically, we're trying to escape and you're trying to kill us is the whole thing. So
let no one escape the planet.
Yes. Yes, exactly. So we've got some sort of shuttle pads, and we're trying to escape. Yeah.
Sounds good.
Think that'll do it, to be honest.
Sounds good.
Yeah, let's do it.
Thanks, guys.
Hey there, I'm Brian.
And I'm Rick.
From Dead Zone, the podcast.
And you're listening to Mantic Universe Podcast.
For everything Mantic under the sun.
So guys, we've just finished our campaign. We missed game two for just time's sake. So we just had a 2v2 battle, which was the GCPS. And at some point we swapped out Mario for Daniel, a new player, who was fashionably late. So GCPS and Forge Fathers fighting against the Plague and the Marauders, who heroically switched sides at the last minute and joined the Plague. So in the first round, the Plague were fairly well defeated, but they readjusted their plans and came back stronger.
I think we can say it like this.
Yeah, yeah, maybe I think we can say something like this, right? Yeah. So the Forge Fathers, I think, were the biggest loser of the battle.
No, they were heroes.
They were.
Yeah, they were. It was a valiant sacrifice.
They sacrificed themselves, so lots of GCPS escaped. So I think only 4 GCPS troopers were actually killed in the final battle.
Yep.
And most of them actually escaped via the escape pods.
Pretty much everyone escaped.
Unfortunately, the Forge Fathers accidentally locked the middle escape pad by rolling a 1.
Right.
And then that made it then pretty tricky.
Yeah, gave us enough time to catch up with them and murder them.
Because at that point, I think you guys were in a quite a tricky position, if I'm honest.
Yeah. So
I think
it would have been hard. Yes.
Made a game of it. Gave you another chance, didn't it?
Yeah. I think also you failed your escape rolls and the GCPS basically succeeded in every single roll, pretty much.
I think this. Yeah, did any GCPS actually fail their survive roll?
I think the medic was the only one.
Well, he headshot the your leader.
He did kill the Marauder general, yep.
Right.
But and then failed to escape. So
yeah. What a day.
It was a sacrifice from the general.
What a day.
One that had to be made.
But
yeah, my leader got killed in the end.
The sniper.
He was annihilated.
Oh yeah, we used two Hulks to kill the sniper.
So Clem made a slightly suspicious case, particularly as Chad Ryder was killed in a building.
No, he was not seen after some smoke in a building, but he's definitely
not dead. There was just some blood and some ruins, but no one actually saw his body.
He's there, maybe in several pieces, but he's still there.
But Clem made the case that it's perfect because it's trapped the GCPS there. They've escaped, but maybe to a kind of holding pen.
Right, they think they've escaped. There are signs escape here with typos on the sign that was painted yesterday.
And their leader is gone, so they need a new leader.
Exactly, definitely not a trap. And
Chad Ryder might be dead, but maybe he survived.
Maybe not.
Yes. You know, absolutely. Yeah, so there we go, guys. So that was us on Icarus 3. Yeah.
Pretty good.
Yeah, it was awesome. The last battle, it was a lot of fun doing the team battle for the last one. It was cool.
So doubles is great though, isn't it? Takes longer,
yeah.
But it's just so
it
fun.
It's worth it.
And I think doing it like one activation, just like a normal game, instead of like both players getting an activation, I think that's the way to do it, even though it does take longer.
I mean, ultimately it's a 1,500 point game.
Yeah.
And with 4 people, so there's always some
discussions.
Yeah. But it also makes it super interesting, I think, right?
Mm-hmm.
So... No, I really like it.
And we played on a 6x4, so trying to balance the strengths and weaknesses of your two allied factions is quite interesting. And we played the kind of Kings of War rules, so your stuff can't inspire your allies, you can't spend command points on your allies, command abilities don't impact your allies. And I definitely think that's the way to go with it.
I agree, yeah. And the scenario was nice also, like it's a custom-made one, right? Like you came up with it.
Yeah, I mean, it's really simple but very effective. So there were 3 points in the middle. Obviously the Plague had sprung their trap trying to kill everybody, which is obviously after the Marauders betrayed us, then you know they were okay, but I think there was no chance the Marauders were going to survive. You know, Chad Ryder, he was going to tie up his loose ends
to be fair, the Marauders slaughtered the GCPS in the first game and then they came back with a vengeance, so
after what, they got a new general, the GCPS, they go, right, who put that guy in charge? Yeah, I think in the first battle, the GCPS, so when their ship crashed, I think they had a strider and a medic alive. And the medic was just coming behind the strider.
Yeah.
So it was pretty brutal. And then kind of you whiffed your charges as well, didn't you? So it was,
I did.
It would have been even worse.
I vastly underestimated GCPS Overwatch, whatever you call it.
Oh, the suppressive fire.
Yeah, suppressive fire. Yeah. It
doesn't look like much, but you do roll a bunch of dice.
When you roll that many dice, sometimes
then you put a pin on it, and you already have, you remove offensive power.
Yeah.
Like, it does make a big, big difference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
nice. And what did we think of the lists? I think they were all pretty good. I think, Clem, we both kind of agree. From the plague list, there's maybe something missing somehow.
Yeah, so I agree. The plague list was probably slightly under. I'm quite happy with the GCPS list. I think it works really well. It has good synergies between the various units and the orders you can use. And it's quite polyvalent. It works well in this context. The plague, I feel like, is the infantry doesn't really do much. They don't have enough offensive power, and they die a bit too easily. And I don't have enough monsters to actually go and punch stuff.
The zombies have got to die for a purpose, haven't they? Rather than just dying.
Yeah. It's almost like your classic chaff unit in Kings of War, right?
Yeah, but then it takes kind of too much space in the list. Because what I remember from previously, before Commence Protocol, already the plague is really like a delivery system for monsters. That's my impression of it. And I guess I should rewrite the list a bit more with this concept in mind. But I just wrote it very quickly just for the models that I had.
And it's balanced.
And it looks cool. Like, it's a more fluffy list with a bunch of zombies. And I thought it would be more interesting like this.
And the shooty guys are surprisingly fighty.
They can do a bit of both things. I think polyvalent units like this, sometimes you kind of lose on it. It's the same for the marauders, right?
Yeah,
the commandos.
Yeah.
Because you cannot pay for the versatility, and ultimately you don't really use it
so much.
And
they're not great. They're good at fighting, good at shooting, but not great.
Sort of, they're not great. And when they face a great shooter or great melee fighter, they lose the fight.
No,
so there's no winning situation for them, really, I think.
Having the balance, having a unit that's flexible, maybe has an advantage, but they definitely weren't the standout units of the day. The Brockers in the first game against the Plague were incredible.
Yeah, I mean, they're very scary.
And then in the second game, it felt like you knew to target the Brockers.
Yeah, I think I managed to pin one unit and it created a big traffic
backlog.
Jam.
Yeah, and we had to obviously try and escape. Then, of course, we put the code in wrong and that was shut down.
Yeah.
And so just to explain to the dear listener, so there were 3 points in the map where roughly in the centre of the map, where we were along the centre line, where we were trying to escape out of. So there was, shuttle bays or whatever we were trying to get out of. So we were trying to put in a pin code or whatever your imagination says. So every round, if we finished our activation touching one of the three escape pods, effectively, you roll a dice, and on the first round, we had to roll a 6.
Right.
So then it goes down to a 5, then it went down to a 4. But if we roll a natural 1, it locks it, and no one is escaping that round. And I think I'm using round correctly there instead of turn.
Correct, yes.
And of course, the Brockers, we accidentally locked down the centre one, which was where the backlog was, etc.
Right, it was kind of your escape plan, and it was a bit delayed.
So only my militia escaped.
I think that's correct.
Brutal.
I mean,
brutal.
Because I deem them maybe convertible, because, they're like the basic troopers, and so I think you can brainwash them. Everyone else don't need them. Everything went according to plan.
It was absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
According to plan.
Yeah, Forge Fathers took very heavy casualties with all of our best stuff, really. But it's the first time I've used the Hammersmith drop troopers. Hammersmith, Hammer...
Yeah, they're very scary as well.
They were really good.
You got your money's worth out of them, for sure.
Definitely.
Killing, 8 Ripper Claw Talon dudes when you dropped in, that was insane.
Yeah.
Over the two games, you mostly ignored them. And then the time you didn't ignore them, you probably wish you had.
Yeah, I think so. I'm not sure what good counter can murder them.
If I'm honest, I don't think they need that heavy armor special rule. I think they do exactly what they need to without that extra pain to kill.
Yeah. No, I mean, they're really good because they come in later, and so they can really counterbalance whatever is going on the table. So they're a big, big asset to the list.
And when they land, they're only 12-inch shooting range, but they've got 10 shots. and it's 10 really good shots.
Yeah.
So they can conceivably, with AP2, they can conceivably wipe out.
Yeah, they can sway an area that looked a bit weak before. They drop in and they change the tide of the battle in that area. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, you drop down with 10 shots and kill 8 marauders. Yeah,
well, that's his land and dice. I mean, he also involved the special ones.
Yeah, exactly. I had to get a special dice out of a secret pocket.
Right.
But, sounds a bit weird. But, they were absolutely fantastic. And I think you guys losing those 8 marauders was really important.
Oh, it made
plan,
a big difference. That flank was completely lost for us.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was our big, Death Star over there, our hammer, right? And then after that happened, it just, yeah.
But I think in the middle, I think you rallied really well because you had a really rough start to the middle, and then you managed to pull it back around a lot.
Yeah, the Territon tried to make a good punch through. Yeah. I mean, they're always quite fun to teleport and get really nasty charges. They did some damage and they kept you busy for a while. They soaked some shooting. The Strider also soaked a lot of shooting. So yeah, cool actions.
Yeah. And particularly because for one round it was locked down.
Right.
So delaying us, that extra meant some people didn't get out.
Yeah.
So there we go, guys.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah. Anything else to say about the campaign?
No,
fun.
I had a blast.
It was fun.
Yeah,
it's great. Yeah, I really like what they've done with Command Protocols. I think it's a really, really good state.
Yeah, me too. And what did we think about playing 750 points?
I think it works quite well. It's I like 1,000 points as well, but ultimately it doesn't add that much. Like maybe you have a couple units or like a big vehicle or something. But in terms of how interesting the game is, 750 works great already. Like it doesn't feel like dumbed down or too simple, I think. And doing 2v2 like this as an option works well. And if we had 1,000 points per army, it would be maybe a bit much. Especially because we don't play Firefight every other week, and so sometimes you have to think, wait, how did that work again? It's a good size for, you know, when you have maybe a handful of games, but not a dozen of games behind you.
I really like it as well, where we know what the kind of really scary units are on both sides, and at 750 points, you need them to do the work, right? So it feels really impactful. Like, for example, when we dropped down the Hammer Troopers, whatever, the Hammer Fist Troopers, and they killed 8 Marauders, it was like, bang, they've done their job.
Yeah.
Whereas,
yeah.
You know, you charge in the Brockers, you need them to do something really important, and kind of, not win the battle, but
they
need to do their job, right?
True. Arguably, you could say, if you have 1,250 points, there is a bit more redundancy, and you might have more options, or you could build more combined strategies, whereas with 750 points you don't have space for that, so you need to make decisions and stick to it and make that thing work. It is a very interesting format already.
And I like as well, to be fair, I like none of us are bringing flyers, because I feel like then you have to plan for another extra thing, because
it's,
you know, the anti-air, and I really enjoy we're all kind of scurrying around trying to get the objectives.
And it makes sense also from like the story that we're telling. I think it works quite well like this. I want to try also flyers. I think they've improved them or adjusted them in an interesting way. But for what we've done today, it makes sense to not have them.
So I think the big winner was the Tron Tech, right? They got a load of guys out.
I think Plague is. I'll leave that open to
Tron Tech, from the way the story was, they were in the dodgiest of all dodgy positions.
Right.
But I think they pulled it out the fire somehow.
Well, we'll leave it up to the listeners.
Yeah. Right. It was, Trendy, it was at the end when you said, okay, we'll call it a draw. That was the
you
point.
Knew, you knew you won.
Yeah, exactly. Fantastic. Thanks, guys.
This is Ronnie Renton, and you are listening to the Mantic Universe podcast.
Super. So last night we played Firefight, and apologies for listening, you may hear some Lego playing in the background.
Active Lego playing.
Enthusiastic Lego playing. So we played Firefight last night, which was very exciting.
Playing one.
Yes. I then insisted we watch John Carpenter's Ghost of Mars, at which point we've lost people, bizarrely. And so it's the next morning. So me, Clem and Trent are just about to play Dungeon Saga Origins for the first time. And it was a very on-brand. It arrived in the post as we were playing Firefly, which was very nice.
Yeah, it was perfect timing.
And in Germany, the distributor forgot to send us the Dungeon Saga Origins core box. So we got all the
Legendary Pledge, yeah.
But didn't actually get the game, which was a little bit frustrating. And it was quite sweet. In the little note they put in with it, they said, please recommend us for...
But, I mean, they managed to ship it pretty fast.
They did.
They got it at the...
Promised it for Christmas, and even though you got your Christmas gift already, Chris, Christmas is in quite a while from now.
Yeah.
So, well done.
Yeah. Well done, buddy. Absolutely, yeah. To be fair, they did correct whatever mistake was made very quickly. Super. So, we're about to play Dungeons & Saga Origins. I think Trent and I both noticed how nice the dice are, which I think is a good example of the quality is just an awful lot higher than Dungeon Saga, or it's just higher than you would expect necessarily. It's very good quality.
The overall quality is really good, like the cardboard stuff. Even the minis, I think, are pretty solid. One tiny detail is the Twilight Kin are slightly smaller than the full release Twilight Kin, so that's a disappointing aspect. But otherwise, it's very impressive, and I'm really looking forward to having mine.
Yeah, Clem and I deliberately got extra impalers to put in our Keys of War armies. Some of the models fit just fine, but the impalers are... It's that problem I've got with my enslaved guardians for my Empire of Dust, is they're like 60% of the size of the plastic ones.
Scaled down a little bit too much.
And they just look a little bit silly next to each other, so that's just...
Yeah, the Soulbane also is a bit... Or was it Soulbane or...
Soulbane you can get away with a bit more because it's crouching. So it's smaller, but you could conceivably say it's crouching to attack, maybe. But you said it, Clem, wish we knew that in advance.
Like, yeah.
It's not necessarily a problem because this probably works better.
For the game, it's probably even better to have them smaller because you could already tell, like, there are 25mm round bases.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the packed table, I think. But anyway, otherwise, really impressed with the overall quality of Dungeon Saga stuff.
Definitely. And I love the little books for the different campaigns and the artwork.
The cards
are
great.
And I feel like even the cards are high quality. Like, they just filling them right. And then we talked about, we mentioned the art on the player mat, whatever it comes with, like beautiful Night Stalker, Twilight Kin art. So it's good looking stuff.
And the model trays also, like... I will actually use them, right? Like
I was thinking the same thing. Yeah.
Like you can really put everything away cleanly in the box and so on. So, no, really well played.
I'm really impressed. And there's a lot of game here, isn't there? There's a lot of game here.
If you go through all of it, or like most of it, you have your money worth quite a few times over, I think.
I think one recommendation, if you have Dungeon Saga, before you start cracking all the tokens, get a little organizer and put everything
in. Right, yes.
Because, you know, they come on those cardboard sheets, you pop them out, which is very satisfying, by the way. But just something to keep the heart tokens and damage and all that stuff. But, yeah.
Be like Chris, be prepared and buy a small plastic box thingy.
Yeah. Exactly. And I think value is very subjective. You know, the idea of concept, if it's something good value, I think it does change from person to person. But I always think back to, if the three of us went to the cinema and spent 2 hours or an hour and a half, we'd probably spend, between the three of us, let's say €50 on
pretty
a ticket
quickly.
Plus some snacks.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we'd have an hour and a half of entertainment for the three of us. Whereas I think something like this game, you know, okay, it was maybe 150 with all the extras and everything, but the base set was something like €100.
Yeah,
right.
Just
yeah.
To me, that seems like, for the amount of time, of quality enjoyment time you're going to get out of this, if you use it, and of course with board
really?
Games, that's always the risk if you buy it and then never open it.
Right.
But if you're actually going to play it, to me, this is really good value.
A very good
really
value
nice
indeed.
I'm just amazed at the number of models the it comes with. Honestly, just right there would be worth it.
Yeah.
And then add on the game too.
But to be honest, the Hellboy board game was amazing. It's a really fantastic board game, and me and Dennis have played it a lot, but I've still got massive boxes, this is great for radio, but huge boxes of stuff just completely unopened of extra
future adventures.
Exactly, future adventures.
Yeah.
Exactly. Mexican wrestler Hellboy and this kind of thing. Yeah. Awesome.
So Chris is Danner again, right?
Yep, Chris is the mage.
Chris is his favorite character ever. That's a thing.
I hate that guy so much.
I think the spells are... It's going to add a different dynamic to it, though, with all the options you have, compared to when we were playing in Berlin.
Yeah, potentially. But it was quite tactical in Dungeons. Yeah. It was simple, but tactical really. In the first one.
I can see you also all left because obviously we're three people and I'm the dungeon master.
Of course.
Yes. Single one, I have to. But it looks nice.
Yeah. And Trent, again, you have to be the elf, right?
Yeah, I was going to be the elf.
Madriga. Were you actually on purpose going to be the elf this time? Because that was your last pick last time.
I just like having the range shot. I think it's pretty versatile in this game.
Very powerful. Yeah.
And then we have the dwarf too, so the dwarf and the elf.
It's classic, isn't it?
Yeah, classic. Dungeon Saga heroes. Exactly. Yeah, and the board is set up, and we're about to go. We just have to read the introduction.
We're going to read the introduction here.
Leave a native speaker do it. The one with the nicer accent.
Beautiful.
Not making you self-conscious at all. Or interrupting you when you start.
My native southern accent.
Right.
When we started making the podcast, I was just like terrified. Like, it was sort of like, oh God, we can't leave it. And I was like, whatever.
You guys are already famous, so now it doesn't matter, right?
You too, buddy. You too.
Yeah, my face is on the shirt. So
every now and again, I mention to Trent. Trent, did you know we've never been on countercharge? And he says, "Oh, I'm shocked you've never been on countercharge. We've still never been on countercharge."
That is correct. Well, we've been talked about on countercharge.
Yeah, talked about behind the back, but that's perfectly normal.
I can neither confirm nor deny that.
Excellent.
Well, let's read the introduction and we'll start rolling some dice. The King of the Dwarves of Abarkar, the Elf King of Thirinia, Adar, and Balazar, the Hegemon of Basileia, sat round the council table. The Necromancer Mortibris, Clem, in his quest for an ancient wisdom was going to threaten the known world. The ruins at Dol Garth have been defiled, and it would appear that those who did so practiced the unholy hearts. The dead must not walk in my ancestors' halls, rumbled Gallic sternly, the grizzled dwarf king. Balazar nodded. The insult is not just to the dwarves. Our allies from Thirinia, Adar, bring us evidence of our own holy warriors having been turned to the ends of this foul wizard. This cannot stand. The hold was once well known to my kin in a different age. It is possible that some traces of them still remain there. I would seek that any elven artifacts may be brought back to us unmolested, that they might be properly returned home. Eridarus's voice was measured and assured, as was the way of the elves. It was agreed by each of the three rulers that a quest to Dol Garth was indeed required, if nothing else than to see if the threat of the upstart Mortibris was real and stop him, if proved so. The four champions selected for this difficult quest were known well by the rulers present, but not to each other. Rorden, a stout dwarf with a head for battle and a taste for strong ale. Madriga, a former esteemed captain of the Sea Guard. Danor, a humble wizard and student of the great colleges of magic in Basileia.
He was like a massive
jerk. He was arrogant.
But that's the origins, so that's the young one.
But isn't this just exactly it's but it's a remake, isn't it?
It's in the past.
Oh, it's a prequel.
I think it's the younger one, sorry, isn't it? I mean, it's rewrite, but...
I heard that, but from reading it, it just sounds like
a completely... A long time ago, I think that's what it is.
And lastly, Orloth, the gruff barbarian, a successful mercenary who wasn't afraid of dealing in trouble.
I think of Orloth as being the burly cleaning man that's just in the room with the meeting and no one can tell him no. That's how I think of Orloth. He's just going, no one says no.
So that's your fantasy. Yeah. I understand now.
The heroes sat around a large fireplace, the warm glow of the fire dancing upon their faces as they shared snippets of stories from adventures past and what might lie ahead. The contact they were waiting for approached from the shadows at the back of the room. I am Master Ranvus, Archscribe from the Universities of Magic, advisor in the arcane arts to His Highness and Holy Balazar. Mortibris will have many sentries and watchers posted to avoid being surprised whilst he searches the ancient hills of Dol Garth. It would be of great benefit to approach unseen if you can. To do that, you need to know where you are going. None are still alive that could offer us that information, but there is other knowledge that will never fade with the passing of time. What better way to avoid detection than to know of all the hidden entrances designed by the dwarfs of Dolgarth themselves? Durig was neither the greatest of dwarf lords, nor had the grandest of holds, but I have learned that he held the largest collection of dwarven maps outside of Abarkar. His ruined hold is east of here, no more than 3 days' ride. It is long abandoned after he met his end during a particularly nasty goblin incursion. I have heard tales of death lurking in the corridors of his old home, though I doubt they're as worrisome as the greater threat of Mortimerus. But I wouldn't discount a possible connection. Evil seeks evil, just as gold breeds greed. Powerful stuff right there. There's a small town by the name of Yammerton, close to Durig's ruins. It lies on the trade route into Abarkar, so good caravans means good equipment if you have the coin. I'd suggest you set up camp on the edge of the ruins, and you can expect to buy decent equipment as you see fit, whilst able to rest between excursions into the depths of the dungeons. So it is that I propose a new venture before you tackle Mortimerus. Seek out Durig's halls and claim the map of Dolgarth. Learn to fight with each other before you have to fight for the whole world.
See?
Pretty good.
Beautifully read, buddy. You dealt with some very tricky words.
Yeah, you know, I probably should have scanned through it before I read it.
And what did we land? No, you did great, buddy. What did we land on? Basileia?
I guess.
Any of those? Yeah.
Basileia? I don't know.
Basil. Yep.
Oh, good.
Brilliant. Yeah.
Let's get started.
I'm Scott, a.k.a. Palette of War. Welcome to Mantic Universe Podcast, and check out my YouTube and Instagram.
So, guys, we just played Dungeon Saga Origins for the first time, and we played the first adventure.
Yeah.
Yes. And, yeah, what do we think?
I loved it, honestly.
It was really good. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I did not... I managed to kill the...
You killed Dan.
Well, you guys... Hey, he's already wounded. Why not jump into a trap? Why not break away from a monster,
yep.
Lost a wound, and then step into a trap, lost another wound.
And then deliberately activate the trap that right. was there, so right. that no one else would. My feelings towards Dan have been known for a very long time. And then it was a gas trap where I had right. to roll anything but a one, and that
yeah.
was fine.
It said, so oh, of course I roll a one.
Of course I roll a one, exactly. So Daniel died, but then he came back again. You basically right. get a free do-over.
Yes.
You get one free do-over.
Danor had a pretty explosive round, though.
Literally,
he killed
like two or three.
Yes.
Yeah,
he
was
on
cool.
fire.
He set a bunch of guys on fire in one round.
Yeah,
that's pretty
yeah,
cool.
He did. But it's an interesting character because he can do an awful lot, but then his race is run. So you
right.
can kind of do one really explosive, powerful thing. But it's a long dungeon to get through, whereas, you know,
right.
the Madrigal, whatever it's called, he's brought a lot of arrows with him. So he gets through a lot of zombies and skeletons.
But the magic is improved, I think, right? It's much easier.
System.
Like the spell,
system.
You use it once.
Yes.
And so you have to think about, okay, when do I pull this special trick? Compared to I rotate the card, and you were confused, right? When
and
we
then
played
they
it.
Were
there
like,
was some
they
kind
were like
of,
casting crystals.
Yes,
or
there
something
was
like
crystals.
Yeah,
yeah,
there's a bunch
Which
of stuff.
Sounded
that was
like a cool idea, but it was totally unnecessary, and I was always slightly confused by
yeah.
it. Anyway.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
this way is much better. I also liked the exploration cards a lot. Like
yes.
In each room, and the fact that the Overlord doesn't have the like the special Overlord cards or whatever I had makes the back and forth a lot faster. And it felt quite good like this.
It did, didn't
right.
it?
Yeah.
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 So there were only three of us playing, and we had... So obviously the Overlord was Clem, because he's brilliant. And then Trent and I had two characters each. And actually that's easy to keep track of, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you've got two
yeah.
characters. It's totally fine. Doesn't get overwhelming. And the abilities, they're simple and thematic, and it's always kind of like you can do one per... map basically per level
mm-hmm.
you can
yeah.
do something really powerful
yeah,
and it's yeah it's really really nicely done
and everything like on the two squares for the first mission was also really nice I think because when I saw it initially I was like it's gonna be a bit boring or you can't get interesting layouts actually not true right you do get a pretty good roaming through the dungeon like with the clever placement of the doors and stuff
Like the only thing is I wish it was 25% larger, because the squares look like they're 25 millimeters.
Yeah, they just fit the that.
And the bases are 25 millimeters, yeah. Which is like, it gets a bit crammed.
It gets cramped out, and the models, the cool models, dynamic poses, right, stick out. So yeah. Olaf's axe, you have to keep saying, right, well, yeah, he's facing that way.
Yeah, you have to be a bit... but it works.
And and to be fair, although that's our... I think that's really our only kind of criticism of it. But having said that, what we also really like is the opposite of that. Wow, isn't it great that a dungeon crawler, because often when you get them, they're sprawling, which means it requires a huge amount of table space.
Yeah, you never know where it goes on the table, and you have to find the right
And it builds out, builds out, and then you realise, flip, we've got to readjust everything.
Right.
It's like you have the whole thing built out on the table, and then you're like, oh, wait a minute, that section of dungeon's only 6 squares long, not 7. Now we got to change it out. Yeah, that's a good point.
And then we had a load of cards laid out. We then have to move them out and do a load of... So I was really, really impressed. You could legitimately play this on a, you know, as people say, on the kitchen table. You could.
Yeah, it worked perfectly fine. No, it's really good.
Yeah. And I think we were all super impressed by the quality of the components.
Absolutely.
Things, right? Really good.
Yeah.
The thing we keep talking about is just how nice the dice are, which may sound like a simple thing, but in the original Dungeons & Saga... cheap dice they could put
it was like that bag find. The bag of 100 you get on Amazon for like $8
exactly.
You know,
totally fine, but how much nicer the experience is when you have, because this Dungeons & Dragons has beautiful dice, and that's just one example of the card stock is nice quality, everything is just nicely made, the box is really pretty, it's just and a very, very sensible size, and they fit a lot of game in that, so they've really thought this through.
Yeah, I kind of regret now not getting the 3D terrain because it looked nice. Although I think they should also, the rumble rubble that blocks the corridors and stuff. I didn't find the 3D pieces, so maybe we need to 3D print something to represent those better.
Right. Okay.
But otherwise, I think it actually does bring something when you actually see the door. And when it's open, you can put the cardboard open door thingy.
Yeah.
But that otherwise works really well, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And it's like, you know, we're very visual players, aren't we? So it's it does make a big... Little things like that, having 3D terrain, does make a big difference. And it's the whole thing, I think, will be really fun to paint. Models, terrain, it'll be really, really fun, really quick to paint.
Yeah. So for you, anyway, like in 2 weekends, the whole box is painted, Chris, right?
Yeah, I'll be all right.
Two and a half.
Slowed down. I think I will probably talk about this on the main podcast, Glenn. But actually, I have slowed down because doing Scots, and I'm sure I'll be repeating all this.
Right.
But since doing the Mup Shorts with Scots, it was kind of things I was already thinking about.
So you became a better painter since then?
Genuinely, from talking to Scott. No, I have. Oh, I have.
That's interesting. And I'm teasing you, but
the key. No, genuinely, I've just been thinking about things a bit more.
Uh huh.
And I think actually the key thing is I didn't have. So the stock advice you get, and Scott gave me the advice, is thin your paints.
Right.
Actually, that wasn't a problem I had. My paint was thin enough.
Right.
But the mistake I made was I had too much paint on my brush. So it was, firstly, it was running a bit. But secondly, if you have less on the brush, you can kind of have more control.
Adjust more.
Adjust more. And like, you know, like let's say, for example, if you're painting metal... You can have more subtlety to what you're doing if there's less paint on that. Because before it was kind of like, I want to maximize efficiency.
Right? Yeah,
paint would be done.
Exactly. And then I'm cutting down the amount of time I'm adjusting, you know, putting paint on the brush.
That's why I like an airbrush. Just
exactly. I was thinking of it like an airbrush, but it's...
That's a good point for metal, because I remember, now that you mentioned it, because if you have the undercoat black, you put some metal on top, if you have too much metal, it goes... everywhere and it looks kind of shit.
Exactly.
Whereas if you
and then you put washes,
dry brushing, so you keep like the depth of it.
Exactly.
I see what you mean.
That's exactly subtle
advice, but good one, Scott. Thank you.
But the end result, it takes a little bit longer, but not as much longer as you might think.
Right.
And the end results are much, much better. So after listening to that episode, I took a load of my Slain models, which is a Warlord Games game. And I really just thought about the models a bit more and the light. And it's super simple, right? So it's kind I'm assuming the light source is above, right? It's the sun or whatever, you know, and then go from there. But it has made a big, big difference. I mean, it's still baby steps. So, you know, there's still... very good at this and all the rest of it, you know.
But a little bit better.
But a significant little bit better. And it was probably, I mean, God knows how many models I painted in the last decade. It's a lot right. of armies, right?
Right.
And I think of myself as an army painter rather than a models painter, which is totally yeah. fine.
Yeah,
but
sure.
I feel like there are just these little adjustments I can make. They're not it's yeah. not radical stuff to be a significant little notch better, yeah, like 20% yeah, yeah. better no, painter, something like that. And it has made a big difference. And the other thing Scott said that I really focused on was that, well, if you've painted models to tabletop standard, there's absolutely nothing stopping you going back. And if you want to make them just a little bit better, you just spend more time on them.
Spend more time and they will hopefully improve them. I've had the issues when I was getting back into the hobby and kind of beginning with it, like spending more time, not necessarily increasing the end results. You know, it's like adding one shade is like, oh, it's too dark now, and then re-highlighting, oh, it's too bright now.
this is exactly what I wanted to say next.
And then,
yes,
you can sometimes, it's not just more time, make it better, but it does if you were very fast initially.
So there was, yes, exactly, buddy. I've shown Scott the photos. I was trying to do non-metallic metals on a Rift Forger.
Right.
As Scott, because actually I've got the models and Scott done exactly that model. So but let's just see what he's done and see
experiment,
if I can experiment. And as you say, Clem, I'm going in circles where it's kind of like I've undone what I just did and then I redo it and then I undo it. But I think that's probably part of the learning process.
It's a learning process, absolutely. Yeah.
Recognising why the model's not improving is probably important, but just, going in circles. But I did paint an Antares model and I think it is significantly technically better than other models I painted previously.
Yeah.
It is just better painted, you know, it is just better than I normally do. So I have, you know, I have significantly improved, not, you know, just by just picking up on a couple of little things Scott said.
I think that's how it works with a lot of skills, right? Like you will be at the same skill level for a long time and then something clicks and it's a one-time event, but it's built on all of the time you spent doing the same level and something clicks and then boop, you climb up a step and you, from now on your baseline is better.
I think so. I think so. And I've started my Twilight Kin army, dear listener. And
it looks good.
I'm really happy.
No, it does look good.
I'm really happy with it. And I've kind of thought to myself, I want this to be the best painted army I've painted.
Yeah.
Not by 10 times as good or Golden Demon, you know.
I can testify it is improved Chris level on the Twilight Kin.
By like 20%. And I just want it, when we go to Clash of Kings next year, I just want it to be the nicest looking army I've done.
Which is a good target. And, so far on track.
Yeah. And then once I've done that, I'm actually going to go back to my EOD and my Salamanders. Because I'm sort of happy with them for what they were, but as well I know if I spend a bit more time, not loads more time, but just a bit more time, I can make that look a lot nicer.
I'm curious to see you actually do it, because I have a similar dilemma in a way with my Forces of the Abyss, because they're okay, but they could take some improvement. Or some models are not entirely finished, at least not to my taste. They were good enough to put on the table, but
they look decent. And they look
decent. They're fine.
Totally tabletop.
And so I haven't had the strength yet to just get back to it and be like, okay, now I'm spending more time on something that was done, air quotes, and spend more time to get it done again. But we'll see. Maybe when they re-release the Forces of the Abyss rules, I'll be like, hey, I want to do a Forces of the Abyss army.
Because there's kind of like two stock bits of advice from the hobby that people often gave. One was never sell a painted army. I think that's totally bogus. If you want to sell an army, sell it.
Yeah.
If playing it doesn't make you happy anymore, if it doesn't spark that creative, there's no reason to keep
it. It's just taking up space. Yeah. You don't play a game anymore. You're not interested. Sell it.
Fair enough.
Yeah. And then the other advice was don't go back. And again, I think, well, that's stupid. I mean,
I see some advantage to both of these, because I think it is easy to regret selling something.
Yes.
Yeah.
So because you've invested quite some time in an army, create unique memories to it, and you will never ever get that back in a way. But I'm a hoarder, so maybe I should shut up on this.
Oh, come on. Yeah.
And never go back to it. I think for me, at least, it was helpful in the sense of, okay, you've
you've done this, move on, and don't stay locked in the circle of trying to improve it and but not improve
maybe,
it.
Maybe that advice is more important to perfectionists, and I'm very right. much not a perfectionist. That's fair enough. The opposite problem.
Yes,
so
yes.
maybe actually if you're a perfectionist, it's learning to let go.
Right, yes.
So, for example, a good friend of mine who got a Kings of War army and an Armada fleet,
right.
he's never had an army to play with me, because he's almost so nervous that he can't paint it up to the box level artwork.
Right.
And if he can't achieve that, he'll
yeah.
make him really
yeah,
unhappy.
Yeah, so he's stuck on so model he number never, one he because never, it's not yet at
exactly,
box art
exactly.
level.
So he doesn't get anywhere, exactly.
Right.
So then he's not getting better.
Right.
So there's no chance of getting, so he's stuck, completely
yeah.
stuck.
No, in that scenario, I think it works.
Yeah.
I have a counterpoint that to what you were talking about, like selling and not painting. So I haven't sold any of my models or armies, but I have like stripped the paint and repainted them. But what I do is anytime that I'm going to do that, and you know, I'm only talking about like one or two armies, I haven't been playing that long in the grand scheme of things, is I always keep one unit or one model from my original paint job. So it's like I have them lined
keep
up on
the
shelf.
That. So you still
and,
have the history.
And
you
I like the idea the because I can look at the first model I painted for my first army and look at what I did now. And personally, I'm like, wow, that last army sucked. You know, it's just kind of
right.
like,
that's
keep,
a good point.
It's like a hoarder, but being an efficient hoarder.
Photo hoarder, just a limited amount.
Yeah,
photos
yeah.
would do the same, but yeah,
something
just have
to think
one,
about. Yeah,
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 have one Klansman model or something.
Exactly.
And Klan, with your abyssals, you're timing this great, because we know there's more abyssal models.
Yeah, they're
coming
soon,
right?
yeah.
And I suspect, you know, hard plastic Molochs is what I'm anticipating.
I hope we would see some of those, yes, absolutely. There's also a big question mark around cavalry, because the...
Abyssal Cav.
Yeah, because it's the older model, so it's unclear. Yeah, I'm not sure which models they will bring back, or maybe something entirely new, like they did with the Twilight King, right? Like the Butcher, that also does the shooty version. So I think what I'm hoping for is like a fancy sprue, sort of, that can build two types of monsters. So maybe Molochs and shooty Molochs, or whatever that means.
Like Ravengers, yeah.
Or whatever. Or maybe
right.
the other thing that they could do for Forces of the Beast that would be awesome is like a big monster sprue, like the Fiend, you know, like the huge guy.
Yeah.
Although I love the resin model that they have for it. But in my head... Forces of the Beast would fit quite well with like a Titan side or like monster, like bigger guy, hard plastic. That would be quite cool.
I'd like.
Do you
I
see
think,
what I mean?
Yeah, totally. But also like the Abyssal Cav unit. Like I get totally get the profile of it, but honestly, I'd rather see some sort of like scuttling hell monster.
Yeah.
For that instead of
no, but
know, demon blokes on
yeah,
demon
so this,
horses.
You know the what is he called? The hero. Shoot, that can be an upgrade to the Molochs as well. And it's a resin cast model from Vanguard. And lovely sculpt. I really enjoyed that model. But I think they could do like a big monster kit like this in plastic. And yeah, do something cool for the Abyss.
Yeah, so the lore, they mentioned like, it's basically the different circles of hell, right?
Right.
Dante's Inferno stuff. But they haven't really expanded on that. So I'd be interested if there was different Abyssal armies from different parts of the Abyss.
I see. Different,
but maybe there's slightly different themes or different
flavors
something.
Of them.
Yeah, different flavors,
yeah.
exactly.
So like,
different
a hierarchy, more,
exactly.
you know. Yeah, well,
yeah,
there kind
exactly.
of is one already, but
yeah.
exactly.
expanding on that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
yeah, exactly. And, you know, maybe you can see an army has got, you know, loads of tortured souls or something. Maybe it's from a
right.
particular
yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
formation or something like that. And just.
No, I think there's something there for sure.
I think so. Yeah. I think so. Because I think Abyss is really well done, classic archetypes.
Right.
Which is really strong, but I think it just could be a little bit more flavoursome.
There's there's room for expansions in all directions. Yeah,
yeah definitely. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Cool. And Trent, while you're here, buddy, you know, while we've got you, as you obviously not done any hobby in a while. Is anything
long
peaking,
time?
Yeah, long time.
Yeah.
Anything piquing your interest? Do you think there's anything?
Dungeon Saga Origin.
Yeah, done. Well, I have my box waiting for me at the house when I get there. So this was just to play it. We'll see if I find the motivation to paint it.
That's it.
It's a great game.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah, yeah.
Really is.
Yeah.
We were just talking about it. Like you know, yesterday we played the Firefight campaign, and of course we had a blast. But you know, Firefight's a little more involved, a little more tactical. You have to. kind of user.
It's been a while, so you need to remember what's going on. But
for Dungeon Saga, I mean, you know, it's Sunday morning right now. Just hopped right in, read the 4-page getting started book, and we're like, all right, let's go.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Yeah. That's such a strength of it.
Yeah.
And I think you can have loads of board games sitting on the shelf, but if it's complicated, you think, oh, I don't really remember how it works, and it puts you off getting it out. Whereas this is so straightforward and streamlined that you're like,
pretty much,
we'll get it. Just get it off the shelf and just dive in and start playing. But I did think, and actually, buddy, just to go on one time, Firefight yesterday. So Trent's Marauders breached the Tromtech ship, and it was bless my good friend Mario, my local friend Mario, who plays occasionally. I think he probably played about 6 months.
Yes,
and you absolutely destroyed him. the poor guy.
Inviting movies to murder
him.
I paid for it in the next game after that. In the following game when I did 3 rounds of shooting with my gun truck and didn't hit a single hit.
Right. But that's it. I mean, it's and I really like the changes to mortars now, where it was the smoke mortars before were, I think we discussed, right, they were too good. They felt very thematic, but they were a bit too good.
It was also fiddly, you know, putting the stuff without the issue.
And a little bit gamey. And a little bit gamey too.
Yeah.
Whereas now they operate a lot more like traditional, you've got a couple of different shots, but operates a lot more like traditional cannons or whatever, artillery.
Yeah, yeah. Where it was pretty thematic.
Usually, more often than not, it's going to miss. Yeah. But every now and again, if it does, something devastating.
It's devastating.
We forgot about -1 for small units, whatever it is.
Right.
But my Brocker leader getting one-shotted by a mortar shell.
I was on the end of it.
You can picture it.
It wasn't like
you were deleting a unit every round. You know,
exactly. No. There was.
Yeah. Because it's got to do something, otherwise there's no point bringing it, right? So it's it really felt really tightly balanced. Yeah.
The one thing we haven't used, but because I played the plague, well, I guess it could have the smoke thing, like when you can smoke your own units.
Yeah.
I think it could also bring some cool tactical stuff, but yeah. That's pretty interesting. I want to play more of it and see.
Yeah, I mean, it might be that potentially a cool idea is that, like, thematically, you know, there's we're saying, like, the plague comes from these old artifacts, right? And some cheeky plague gland.
Right.
Gas comes out with something. So maybe giving your guys more plague gas, maybe it's kind of like,
really a supercharged Ghost of Mars right there.
Right.
He confessed of watching it 6 times only for laughing at it, of course.
I mean, it's like 30% laughing at it, but I do
we've seen the t-shirts you have, Chris.
I do I genuinely enjoy the film Ghost of Mars. Objectively, it's a bad, it's a very fascinatingly terrible film.
That you thoroughly enjoy.
Lots of dialogue that doesn't move the plot along. A lot of dead-eyed actors explaining weird things.
Music completely out of nowhere.
So, people underacting, overacting. No one seems surprised when they walk into a room full of murdered miners. And you know, and then later...
Spoiler alert!
Sorry, spoiler alert. Yes, but it was a film I thought was very similar to our... Similar enough as an excuse to watch it to our little Firefight campaign. So I forced everyone to watch Ghost of Mars.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All good.
It's, I mean, for about 25 minutes as we're sitting there going, oh, I think I've made a terrible mistake putting this film on. But it was, and it's the way that they all get on the train and flee with, you know, not massive casualties. And then they change their minds, get back on the train and go back again and start shooting. And so there's this sort of the Ghost of Mars. There's basically this sort of evil gas swirling around that goes into people and they become a plague monster, basically. Yeah. But the good news is that they realise if we shoot the zombie, the gas will just infect somebody else. And then, so they sort of reach this point where they realise this. And that's the point at which they've all got 2 machine guns and they're just wheeling in and shooting everyone.
Yeah, it doesn't change what they do at all.
Exactly. It's just making the situation far, far worse. And it has Jason Statham, an incredibly creepy character with hair, with a bit of, you know.
This is true.
You can see why he shaved it, but, you know.
Yeah.
So there we go, guys. Ghost of Mars. Killed John Carpenter's career for a good 9 years, but I think we can all agree, well worth it.
pretty much.
Yeah.
All good.
There's from the plague list, there's maybe something missing somehow. Is that working?
Test.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
Okay, we're back.